Welcome to Cerebral Flex Podcast, episode 25. It's about H.P. Lovecraft and cosmic horror. We are your hosts, Namwon Sakati, Jareth R.R. Blackstar. Be sure to hit the subscribe button and the like thingy and talk to us through the comments. So, in reading about H.P. Lovecraft, I learned he was a complicated individual like most of us are. Where's your beautiful face?
Hi, I'm here. I didn't know if you had like an intro planned out or whatever, but H.P. Lovecraft, I am excited to talk about this guy because he's interesting.
I do have a planned intro, of course.
Oh, okay.
But it's not, I didn't want to take the screen for it. It wasn't like that big of a dramatic.
Oh, okay. You know, sometimes, ta-da. Sometimes we plan big dramatic ones where you like go on for a few minutes. So I didn't know.
No, I mean, honestly, you know more about him than I did. His full name is Howard Phillips Lovecraft.
Yep.
And my favorite source learning about him was a Biographics YouTube video. Very informative, actually. And it sucks that he only lived 46 years. And he created the Call of Cthulhu, the Necronomicon, Book of the Dead, and the haunted town of Arkham, among many other things. And he influenced pop culture so much that it's still being referenced today. But yeah, that's my dramatic intro, I guess.
Oh, wow. That's very dramatic. Yeah. So Lovecraft, you could almost call him the godfather of horror fiction because, again, he was in the very early 1900s. A lot of people only know Lovecraft through other mediums. Like Stephen King, he uses a lot of like Lovecraftian imagery in his books. Cthulhu's obviously like the really big one. Everybody knows who Cthulhu is nowadays. He's actually seen a rise in popularity over the past, I'd say, decade or so. A lot of really famous horror people are inspired by him. Stephen King, I already mentioned. Neil Gaiman really likes him.
Batman has a lot of
Lovecraft references. The Dark Souls video games, Bloodborne, Guillermo del Toro, the director who did Hellboy, Pan's Labyrinth. He has like a lot of Lovecraftian imagery. So yeah, he's like seen like a rise in popularity due to all these different creatives that have read him. But he's also like a super complicated and somewhat racist, we could say, individual.
No, he was definitely racist. He didn't like Jews and blacks, but we'll get into that. So I'll just cover some of the basic bullet points for people. He was born August 20th, 1890. He was considered American literature's titan of terror. He was a Rhode Island recluse. He was pretty much unknown his entire lifetime, and he wasn't noticed until after he died, like so many great artists. He often wrote dark secrets of lineages and rich families, involving just murders and, you know, all sorts of debauchery. His mother's family were wealthy aristocrats with rumors of inbreeding. So that's fun. not really. His father was a traveling salesman and he was dying from syphilis right off the bat. So that sucked for little HP. His dad went into insane asylum in 1893 and he only lived 5 more years. And in his time in that asylum, Lovecraft never saw his dad again from the time he went in there, which is really dark to me. So him and his mom, Sarah, moved in with her dad, Whipple Van Buren Phillips, which is like the greatest name on earth. Whipple.
Whipple.
Yeah. And, Mr. Whipple there, he often invented chilling ghost stories, especially during like gatherings. And this is where Lovecraft found the craft he loved.
Oh my God.
That's my dad joke of the day. And he was still affected by his dad's death. So he had night terrors starting at age 6. He was so traumatized, he rarely attended school. Whipple's home was full of books, which is cool. And then some of them were Edgar Allan Poe's works. He had the Arabian Nights, scientific journals. And Whipple unfortunately had a massive stroke on March 27th of 1904, and then he died a day later. What else happened? Lovecraft and his mom went mad pretty much after Whipple died, and then they further, you know, were more severe hermits, and they actually like were very toxic together.
Yep.
And fought all the time, and his mom told him to never leave the house, which is odd. And so like HP would stay in his house pretty much until sunset, and he would only go out at night, like the Smashing Pumpkins song.
Yes. Yeah, Lovecraft's upbringing pretty much it traumatized him for the rest of his life, because his father, like, he went mad, and they just, back in those days, they just threw you in an institution and goodbye, you were gone. By the age of six, his grandmother had passed away, and so Lovecraft's mom and sisters, they dressed all in black mourning clothes of the day, and they'd walk around the house for like months after crying, which again, very traumatizing for a six-year-old. And then wealthy grandfather dies, and mom is obviously not okay, and that in turn made Lovecraft very not okay. He was extremely agoraphobic. I think a lot of it had to do with his upbringing and just like the weirdness surrounding his family, his mom being a shut-in, all the death and madness surrounding him. His grandfather was also very abusive towards him, something that they might not have mentioned in the biographics thing, because I know they're more shorter videos, is his grandfather was a very pull yourself up by your bootstraps and face your fears type of guy. So Lovecraft was very scared of the dark, and his grandfather would like lock him in dark rooms and stuff like that to face his fears. Oh. So as a young child growing up in this type of environment, it does not breed well for a mental state. You see it later on in his life, because more about Lovecraft is like being inspired by different authors and movie filmmakers and video games and stuff like that. Of course, we have to have people come out who like read his letters and stuff like that. And you shouldn't make light of the fact that he was very racist even for his time. In a lot of his letters, he has like this paranoid, almost schizophrenic writing about how the people of color are going to rise up against the white men and pay them back for what they've done. He was also, though, very racist against pretty much any immigrant, whether you were of a darker persuasion or white. He hated the Dutch. He hated Jewish people. He thought pretty much that white Americans and Anglo-Saxons were like the better race, which was an extreme viewpoint at that time. Because the Nazi Party wasn't even founded or a major thing until around the time he died. He died in like the middle of World War II. And towards the end of his life, you kind of see maybe some people argue a softening towards different races. But that's all kind of conjecture, because if you look at the letters of the time, he was still a very paranoid person. So I think his racism was less due to like hatred and just more an extreme fear of everything, because he lived a very sheltered life. He lived in a household that had a huge mansion. He had money his entire life, and then when the money was gone, he was married by a rich woman who loved his writings.
So why don't we get into that? So, yeah, at age 18, he had a nervous breakdown. He locked himself in a room. He had cryophobia as well as agoraphobia, which is a fear of the cold, which sucks because he lived on the East Coast. So he would lock himself up and read pulp magazines. And one of his favorite things he read was The Argosy. And he took it upon himself, because he hated this writer, Fred Jackson, so much. He would write in to The Argosy all the time, in poetry, in rhyme. And this guy took notice of him, Edward F. Doss, the president of the United Amateur Press Association, and gave him a job. And at one of those conventions is where he met that female you're speaking of. What's her name? What's the name? Sonia Half-Green. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who's a Russian Jew that was 7 years older than him. And she actually had to force him to read romantic books just to get him to have sex, because he wasn't that interested in sex. But yeah, they married 1924, March 3rd of that year. And he was doing well publishing stuff for that guy. And Sonia's hat business was booming. But then she got sick and lost the business, and he failed getting a major writing deal. So they pretty much split up because of money issues, and he moved into that Red Hook district, which was full of immigrants. And that is where he became the super racist. And I wonder, I know it's fear of people and being totally sheltered your whole life that can create extreme ignorance. But mm-hmm. I wonder if it wasn't his own inadequacies that he was truly hating.
Oh, I'm sure it goes hand in hand. I'm sure it was living the sheltered life, the fear of the unknown, the abuse. And then also he recognized, and his mother even like told him, that he was not an attractive looking man. Like he was kind of weird looking. If you look at pictures of him,
oh yeah,
he's gaunt, very pale. He's got like this haunted look into his eyes because he suffered night terrors his entire life, which we'll get into that in a little bit later. But I think a lot of his issues stem less from a place of hate and more from a place of ignorance and fear, for sure. And that could also be fear and uncomfortableness with himself and his own inadequacies. Mm-hmm. But he did write a whole butt ton of stories, and you can get this at Barnes & Noble, The Complete Fiction, and it is awesome. What I will say about Lovecraft and his writing, and you read some of his writing, right?
Yeah, I read The Call of Cthulhu and one of the short,
it's
some short story online.
It's definitely old-timey. It's definitely a little dense, and he likes to use adjectives, a lot of adjectives.
Yeah,
adjectives upon adjectives. But if you can get used to the style of it, he created a whole literary genre that didn't really exist before his time, because it's the genre he created, or that a lot of people will reference as Lovecraftian horror, is also given the term cosmic horror, which is this fictionalized emphasis on the horror of the unknowable and incomprehensible, more than like usually horrors like got gore and shock and stuff like that. Like if you read Lovecraft, it's very hopeless and empty and existentialist in a way. So you can kind of see like how his mindset was. Like he was very much not aware of what was out there and questioned it all the time.
How do you pronounce it? Dagon or Dagon?
It depends. Most people would pronounce it Dagon, but Dagon or Dagon was actually an ancient Sumerian entity that has connections to the Demiurge. So historically, you'd probably say it Dagon, but the way he pronounced it and other people do, it's called Dagon, I believe.
Yeah.
There's probably some nerds in the comments who will want to fight me about it, and that's cool.
That's fine. And it is available online. I just wanted to let people know, if they didn't have money to buy a huge book, that at least is free to read online. And that's about Dagon as a deity and leader of the Deep Ones. And he's an amphibious humanoid race living in the oceans, which I think is a precursor to Cthulhu.
Yes. He has so many. And honestly, like, you don't need to buy it, obviously. Like, if you're a weird collector like me and you like Lovecraft, you can buy it. I think it was only like 20, 25 bucks. But if you don't want to buy it and you only want to read a few of his stories, you can find pretty much all of them online. Or even you don't have the time to read, you can find a bunch of people who narrate the stories. Like,
yeah,
they're super awesome narrators on YouTube. Like,
and fans. There's really bad ones too. I bought The Call of Cthulhu as an ebook. Uh-huh. And I'm not going to say the name of the narrator, but it was garbage. absolute garbage. It was almost horrible to listen to just because of his voice.
Oh man.
And the way he pronounced words. He couldn't pronounce half the words in the story.
That's it was
awful. Yeah. But anyway, he called black people beasts and semi-human figures when he lived in that area. And he was also a raging anti-Semite, and he wanted to punch everyone in sight, he wrote once.
And yet he married a Jewish woman. Like,
right. And that's what I was about to say. Sonia was Jewish.
Yes.
and by 1925, he had an actual phobia towards all non-white faces, which you were saying earlier.
Yes.
And then some people theorize that he channeled his phobia into his stories about aliens and monsters. So he was thinking about non-white people when he made some of these monsters, possibly. It's just a thought.
It is possible. Like, I don't like speculating on him, because also people will say, like, towards the end of his life, he wrote these stories where, like, it was questioning not just the otherness of other people, but the otherness within himself and stuff like that. And there's a lot of conjecture about that. So I don't like to speculate on if the monsters he was creating, and we'll get into that. I don't think that he created them, was based off of his fear of people of color, people that he hated. But I mean, if you look at his letters and you read some of the things he said, he was definitely racist. And it's been noted by people he was racist for his time. So there was definitely something wrong with the way that he viewed people as a whole. And you can kind of, if you think about it in like a current day context of like wealthy versus the poor, like most wealthy people look upon like all people in like a racist lens, and he was from like almost that aristocratic type of class at the time, but then so much bad shit happened, and he was like they pretty much lost their wealth, and he's like a weird shut-in. It kind of like shows you like how, like, if a rich person was to lose all their money, like how they would be just like a regular, like your typical conservative Southern American who's racist towards everybody. So it's interesting to think about in that context. But the interesting thing about Lovecraft is not just the amount of stories he has, but he created an entire mythos, which was something that had not been done up to that point. Essentially what he did is, he made his own pantheon of gods. So like how there's the Greek pantheon or the Egyptian pantheons or the Norse pantheons, he created a pantheon of extraterrestrial cosmic entities that he allowed other authors to use, which was something that was unheard of at the time. He created this mythos, and he allowed other people to use his work, which is why you see different appearances of different Lovecraftian entities appear in different stories. Some of the more popular ones are Cthulhu. He's the giant, monstrous, humanoid, octopus-faced entity. He appears across all different types of literature and movies and stuff like that. Even if you go on Etsy and you type in Cthulhu, like the image is obviously not copywritten because so many people sell Cthulhu stuff. Another really popular one is Nyarlathotep. He appeared in, I can't remember what the story was, but he's one of the more famous ones because he appears time and time again. And what you'll see in the Cthulhu mythos is a lot of different gods appearing in different forms, trying to like infect the earth. Cthulhu is called the Great Sleeper because it's said when he wakes up, We're all a dream inside Cthulhu's head, and when he wakes up, we'll all cease to exist. So he was very much into like supernatural horror and this fear and like awe of the unknown. And he had these night terrors. And I think honestly, what he was tapping into was potentially a very disturbing realm within like the astral spaces. That people nowadays, like modern day practitioners of magic and stuff like that, they actually contact and can have experiences with these Lovecraftian entities because they have such a strong and powerful pull on people. I don't think that he made a lot of them up. I think a lot of them were probably plaguing him in his dreams, and he kind of brought them to life in these books, because there are people, chaos magicians and stuff, who actually use these entities to perform magic and stuff, which is really cool.
So for more of the linear minded folk out there, after he lived in that Red Hook area, he moved in with his aunts Lillian and Annie, and he never saw his wife Sonia again because she didn't want to move to Rhode Island. And Cthulhu was created in 1926. It's considered the most important of all of his creations, and Robert E. Howard, the creator of Conan the Barbarian, was a huge fan. Also, our author August Derleth loved him. They talked, actually. The group created the Cthulhu mythos together, apparently. And then a master working at his peak, he created a lot of awesome works. And during the 1930s, he was affording pretty nice vacations. So he had a little bounce back. But then everything came to an end when Lillian died in 1932. And you know he doesn't do well with death. So yeah, him and Annie had to move to a small apartment, and they went into poverty. And he became a ghostwriter for Harry Houdini, which I didn't know. And he sent over 100,000 letters in his lifetime, second to Voltaire at that time. And he gave up writing in 1936. And then he was suffering from grip, but it was actually cancer. Robert E. Howard, his friend, committed suicide. Then Lovecraft spiraled into a horrible depression yet again. Yeah, and then he admitted himself to a hospital and died in 1937. And it's just sad. His life was pretty much just a series of sad events. And I think that without any type of belief in magic at all, could create a ton of, you know, pretty crazy, horrific creatures and entities just alone with trauma from life. But yeah, I think a lot of his work is definitely exciting. When I read The Call of Cthulhu, a lot of the parts were pretty intense. And just his imagery is off the charts. And yes, it makes you actually like see what he's talking about almost. So great imagination, great writer. It's amazing that he didn't actually go to school that much, because his writing style is that of, you know, Ivy League level literature. So
yeah, a lot of people back in those days who were from that type of class, they definitely benefited from education in a way that we don't educate ourselves any further. Like you even see it with people like like one of the people I love to talk about all the time, Carl Jung, like educated in a way that people are just not educated anymore. But yeah, he created a lot of really cool stories. And he had I mean, it's a testament to how great his universe is, because people still write Lovecraftian horror. They're still inspired by it. Like, again, people know Cthulhu, Nyarlathotep, Azathoth, Yog-Sothoth. You look up Dagon. You look up Lovecraftian horror, and there's all sorts of like weird, disturbing imagery from people who are inspired by his work. All these like dark creatures with thousands of eyes and mouths and stuff. Totally crazy stuff. And he's so popular, he even inspired somebody to write a little book that I'm sure a lot of people heard about during the Satanic Panic, which was the Necronomicon. He mentioned it in a story that the Necronomicon was a Middle Eastern text, and it was a book of great magic and spells. And this guy who published the original one, his name was Simon. He pretty much, in memory to Aleister Crowley and H.P. Lovecraft, he wrote this little grimoire, and it's got a bunch of different rites and stuff like that in there. There's not very many mention of the Lovecraftian beings. It does mention Cthulhu, Nyarlathotep, a couple others, but actually this grimoire itself is got a bunch of different ancient Sumerian deities in it, and a lot of people who practice like the occult and magic are super into H.P. Lovecraft because of this little Necronomicon, because this is a lot of people's first foray into the world of magic. A lot of edgy kids like to buy it and try and recite the rites from it and see if anything can happen. And sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. It's a very interesting little text.
Ironically, we never heard from those kids again. When was the Necronomicon published?
I believe it was, let's see if it says it in here. I believe it's in the 70s.
Really?
Yeah, it's not a very old book. Yeah, so copyright was 1977. It's not a very old book, but the reason that it's called the Necronomicon is because of Lovecraft, because he mentions it as like this book that was lost to time that has the most evil names in it and the most powerful magics. And then this guy who must have practiced magic, his name's Simon, we don't know anything about him really. He wrote all these rites, and you know, it's got cameras. It's got a bunch of pictures in there for doorways you can open. It's got sigils. It's got invocations. It's pretty much a magical like text, and it's a fun little read. And it's, again, you know, people got into magic because of it, and it was one of the big books along with the Satanic Bible and the Satanic Rituals during the time of the Satanic Panic. Like, you can't buy it, but now you can pick it up in any bookstore today and you can read out of it, and it's fun. It's fun to do if you're trying to do spooky Halloween things. There are some people who use this text pretty literally and get results from it. I've not really done anything with it because everybody knows I do stuff that study of the occult and stuff like that, but I've never really done any rites from it because I'm scared. I'm scared of what could happen if something actually does happen.
Yeah. I'm that what if guy.
Yeah.
I don't believe it exists in well, I do and I don't. But I don't want to try it. I don't want to fuck around and find out.
Right, exactly. there's obviously power in symbols and sigils. So like, if you wanted to think about the influence of Lovecraft and people who work with these entities, like we'll take Cthulhu for example, people who like practice the occult and work with Cthulhu, like just think of the amount of energy that's put into the image of that. You know what I mean? Like how much just the power of the image has, which is really like what can bring to life like certain things. It's the whole tulpa, the whole egregore, all these different creatures that can get like brought to life, like Slenderman. There's people who like worship Slenderman or who have been able to conjure him and stuff like that. And I ain't going to fuck around with Slenderman because that's some
I personally energy. Worship Siren Man. Siren Man is my homie.
Siren Man is weird, but again, very Lovecraftian inspired. It's weird. Way to bring it back around. So yeah, he was a very interesting individual, a very flawed individual, but he created some great work. He created a whole new genre, and he created this mythos it's still open for public use today. Like if I was writing a story, I could totally mention Cthulhu in it, and I probably won't get sued by anybody because it's a public domain mythos, which is
so
that's awesome.
You think that was intentional? That's what you're saying.
What, the open to the public?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Because he allowed other writers that.
Were right. Part of his I just didn't know if they had a closed agreed copyright amongst themselves.
No, I think that he saw the power of like, you know, having a different pantheon of beings like out there for people who wrote horror to use. And I think it was like probably one of like the more genuinely nice things he probably did. So yeah, he's definitely an interesting individual. And I think again, like if you look at really popular things, he influences a lot of horror today. Very existentialist, philosophical, but also very like sad and depressing.
Yeah, which is right up our alley.
Right? This is why I need to get you to read Berserk, because Berserk is very Lovecraftian inspired, and it's also very sad and gruesome.
Well, I've been trying to get you to read Junji Ito.
Somebody at work last night literally was telling me about Junji Ito.
You need to read Junji Ito, dude.
And he showed me some artwork, and I was like, all right, I gotta get
I think
that.
I've tried to do that with you.
I think you have too.
But I'm just now reading over, forgot the title because I'm an asshole, but it's all about spirals and people like basically turning into spirals. Like the first story, the dad of the main character like spirals himself in a fucking little circle on the floor till he's dead.
Right.
Like every bone is broken because he turns himself into a spiral. Shit is mad. It's pretty fun stuff.
Yeah. I like the horror stuff, and it definitely started with that guy, as flawed as he is. Yeah. And a lot of people don't talk about other people who are really famous that did horror, like Edgar Allan Poe. He was the Poe's a little racist too.
Well, I don't know. I think everyone's a bigot to some degree. Some people take it to an extreme.
Yeah. Lovecraft was definitely more of the extreme. Like, I think Poe, he was racist, but he was more like in line with the racism of the time type of thing. So there's varying levels to it for sure.
I mean, I'm a misanthropist for the most part, so I'm as bigoted as you get. I just don't like people.
Yeah.
So I guess, I'm trying.
Guess, to end it, because Lovecraft obviously has some problematic views, and there are people who don't like people who have problematic views, and they try to
shun them
or censor them, or, you know, say they shouldn't be read or cancel them or whatever. Do you think that Lovecraft should be read by the broader public and appreciated, or no? Because
I think all great works of literature, regardless of the person's personal stances, should be ingested and learned and remembered. I think a good piece of work is a good piece of work. Doesn't matter what the person was about. If it's a good piece of work, it's a good piece of work, you know?
Yeah.
Because if you got into it, Gandhi was a homophobic person.
Yeah.
So, or was he not? He was either racist or homophobic. One of the two.
He was both.
And, you know, there's a lot of great people. And like Martin Luther King beat his wife. I mean, Ryder cheated on his wife. He cheated on his wife.
A lot.
It's like, you know, you can find a flaw in almost everyone, you know? So when I choose a hero, I'm not looking at the person's personal opinions or actions in their personal life. I'm looking at what they did to change the global stage for the better, you know? And if Lovecraft's works inspired great things like Batman and, you know, amazing artists across the board, I say cherish that work.
So
you don't have to love the man.
You're definitely of the mindset of separate the art from the artist.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You don't have to love the man to love the man's work.
Yeah, I agree.
So,
and he's dead too. He's been dead for a really long time. So, not that it makes the racism okay, but like you're not giving any money to his estate by reading or purchasing his books. They go to big publishing houses now.
And he also had a shitty life. I mean, he had tons of
he died of cancer alone, so like
he didn't get laid that much. I mean, the guy's life wasn't great.
I like how that's the threshold for like how good a life you had. He didn't get laid that much, so can't have been that good a life. You were gonna piss off the incels, dude. Good lord.
I don't give a fuck. I like to get laid. Hit the like button, subscribe.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're back. We hope you guys enjoyed this one. It was a little bit shorter. Just talking about somebody who I think he's gaining more popularity in the broader culture, but I also hear a lot of people bitching about how problematic he is. And he's problematic, but I don't think that you should not read something because somebody was problematic. They still read Mark Twain's Huckleberry Finn in school for some freaking reason. And it's an okay book. Like, Mark Twain's a pretty decent writer, but you know, did you have to say the N-word so many times?
Well, I mean, I feel that way about Quentin Tarantino. I think he's borderline racist, and I love his films.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to the whole Django Unchained debate. Like, did he use the N-word too much? I mean, in historical context, no.
No, I mean,
he really didn't.
Most of his movies have the N-word.
Yeah.
Even when it's not necessary.
Yeah.
What was the one?
People say it unnecessarily all the time.
What's the one with all the different colored agents? There's like Agent Pink.
Is it Reservoir Dogs or something, right? Yeah.
Yeah. That word was used a lot in that, and that didn't need to be used in that film. I just think he has some underlying bigotry that...
Oh, definitely.
He's definitely vents out.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
Well, whatever.
Yeah. All right. So on that note, we're going to end it, and we hope you guys liked it, and we will see you guys on the next one. I think the next one we're doing is going to be the witch hunts for the spooky season. We're starting off the spooky season with H.P. Lovecraft. I didn't even notice.
So we're not going to do the music one next?
We are going to do it next, but that one's going to be the one that comes out first. Oh yeah. So we're recording these, and we're going to flip them all around, and you guys are going to be really confused. It's going to be great. Yeah. We're messing with the time continuum. We're like the Avengers.
Messing with your brain.
All right. We will see you guys on the next one. Next one will be the witch hunts.
Yep.
Love you. Bye.
Take care.